Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about podcasts while driving. I'm just popping down to Penrith to pick up some of the car into gear, correct gear. I don't want to crash into the back of a tree behind me. Pulling out of the into our street and going down the mountain. I'm going down the mountain to pick up some brass shim. It's not actually brass shim, brass plate from a hobby shop in actual fact. And there's a little bit of a story to it. So there's two aspects to what I'm going to go through. I'm going to go through Arduino and LabVIEW and Raspberry Pi and trying to work out which one's the best to go ahead and trying to understand what exactly I should do. So Arduino is basically a microcontroller chip, like say a 1980s washing machine or something a bit more complex, so, you know, much higher end than that. And it can basically be written by a serial bus to non-volatile memory and programmed to program on 10 digital IOs and about 8 analog interfaces. Got a power supply, that's about it. It's fairly, it's like the chip. And then the chip has a series of pin connects, and you can use these pins, which are specifically developed for breadboards and prototyping. You can use it actually in it. There's a standard, a tenth of an inch, 10 per inch spacing, and so you can clip onto an Arduino various shields. Now, the shields are good. You can get Ethernet or motor control shields, and ultimately it's got the shield version. I'm not quite sure whether Raspberry Pi does. So it's basically you're buying a microcontroller chip, and you can program it via serial bus, and that's really come out more since 2005 onwards. You know, 2007, 2010, it was modern, so it's pretty, you know, it's pretty ready for something new. So if I'm investigating it now, and basically you can serial program it, and it's got sufficient smarts about it to be actually quite useful. It's got something very useful for me, which is microsecond timing. You know, you think microseconds, 1 millionth of a second. You think, well, perhaps I won't need that. But in actual fact, I do, because I'm making these things which apply a pulse to a magnetic pulse to a... I'm scrolling myself down because I'm freezing to death with this. So, fortunately, you have to put up with me driving, some focusing, some going along. Yeah, so it's 70 millisecond pulse north, 70 millisecond south, stuff like that. And the Arduino far outperforms anything that, say, Einstein and the people in the 60s had. It switches with a shield on it, a motor driving shield. It switches very well. And even so, I'm just scratching the surface. I bought a motor shield. If you don't have a shield and you get a motor board, separate motor board, it's the same chip. Motor control chip, except the chip is now mounted on a heatsink, and that allows you to access, in this case, 5 times the power, 5 times the magnetic field. So I've got a factor of 5 for magnetic field to go up. Now, this is just with the Arduino, and I'm only going to hopefully it is mercifully short. I was trying to think how I'll do this. I'm just playing my route into Penrith, because I've got to go in and get out. So I differentiated, because I've got this, I can now go a factor of 10, 100 times better, because the reliability of my switching as a fraction of the time is now massively increased, and the switch is instantaneous. It's something that designers could not have thought of 100 years ago when they were doing this. And so this allows me to build a much faster circuit and then start to see the response and build the response in real time, which has been a great advantage to me. So that's allowed me to walk into high Q. Now, high Q, Q is the ring down frequency. It's the loss of your resonator. So if you're a big kettle drum and you can hear it, you can hear the loss wave comes out to you. So you store, and that you store a pulse, and the loss wave goes out. Now, of course, with this, you've got a very, very tiny push. It's sort of like the opposite. The sound waves are coming in and trying to oscillate it. So it's like a singing into a glass and getting it to shatter. You've got to couple it and make sure that it can actually listen to you. Now, I think I myself, having seen this, have my doubts. Now, quartz is an example of a high fidelity component. That's because it's of uniform composition and high frequency, whereas lead, if you had a lead goblet, you couldn't sing to it because it's very soft and pliable, and as it flexes, it dissipates energy. Whereas so you want something with a high spring energy. So this is what I'm doing at the moment. I'm building successively high Q resonators, and as you build a high Q resonator, your frequency has to be controlled ever more. So as I'm getting up into 300 Q, half Q is critically damped. Less than half, it's overdamped. Half, it's critically damped. It does this one across. Cars in general, you want to be critically damped. And then this is the most important thing. So if you've got car tires are designed to be flat and designed to have a low Q. If you overinflate them, it's not that the grip changes all that much. You increase the Q of your car tire such that it will, rather than damp, it will start to oscillate. Now, the point when it's pushing down, it grips well, but when it lifts up, it can skid. And so if you overpump your tires, you get an excuse to skid around with that. So So with the Arduino board, I've got high frequency, so I can actually watch this. And so as I power it up, the laser line of oscillations, I've got a little laser going into my oscillator, and it thinks the you can see the lines sort of grow, sort of like a flat. It sort of grows over, obviously, I've got high Q. It goes over a couple of seconds, which is, you know, it's a reasonable growth. And but the thing with high Q, there's two things. It's the number of oscillations to half power. So if you have it oscillating 10 units, and then half power is, I'm trying to work out whether it's square root of 2, 70% or 50%. Sorry, it's 50% engineering works there. They'd say half amplitude, which is slightly different from, maybe different from power. Depends how it's defined. I'm sort of used to amplitude and quantum mechanics being slightly different. Okay, so it's, let's say if it rings once to half power, that's got a Q of 4.353. Okay, and now if it rings 10 times, it's got a Q of 45.3, and if it rings 100 times, which is what's beginning to happen with me, is it gets up to 453. So I'm not 100, I'm getting a ring around 80, something like that. Where, now strangely enough, counting rings over such a period of time is sort of really laborious. There's another way to get to Q, and that's your bandwidth. So you tune your frequency across, and the range, so either side of your Q for half power will be a frequency bandwidth. Your frequency bandwidth, so F divided by your frequency bandwidth is the Q of the system. So, and that's a very convenient way of doing it because you can just program it in. Now, this is where I'm coming up a little bit unstuck, that the program in Arduino is sort of like, hang on, you can use floating point numbers, but the floating point numbers don't seem to go into the Arduino commands. Now, the Arduino commands is sort of like one step up from what you have in LabVIEW commands. LabVIEW commands, you can control everything down to the millisecond, which is more than enough for, you know, use response, you know, but for this, you have to go down to the microsecond. So there's this beautiful thing where you can say delay and write a number from 1 to 1,000. That's the number of milliseconds, or 1 to 10,000, or 100,000. It just goes up there in the delay. But if you go delay microseconds, it says delay capital case microseconds. You can program in a microsecond delay, and indeed, this is where Arduino suddenly takes off. So it's the Arduino microsecond control which allows you to go up to the high speed. Then you suddenly start to see these things. You want to program it at high speed. So let's see, you've got a little board, you plug it into your computer, the little board. On top of the board is a motor controller, and you're telling the motor controller to jiggle back and forth 14 times a second. I'm just going to work out what I'm doing here. 14 times a second. So, okay. It's software controlled, whereas back in the 60s and whatever it is, they could have had, I mean, they had brilliant timing circuits in the 60s. They had the radar control and all that type of stuff. Perhaps they had, it would be sort of a pretty amazing type of thing that they could really time things. They could, in the 1960s, they could time to the nanosecond. Basically, they had the counters and stuff like that. I still remember my dad's counters. They had tube with a little ring, and the spark would go across one, and then when it gets the next one, it would go to the next, and you have these little ring sparkers and counters, and there indeed. But it was a big feat to do something, and then convert that to a reliable current source, and you know, that's all done in solid state now. So the Arduino is pushing up there. And it does control. Now, of course, what's it showing me is that I can measure the Q of these things quite well. Now, what happens is that, depending on how I build it, these high Q things are very, very sensitive to the way that I build it. And fundamentally, you could have a high Q wire, or hookup wire is by far the best wire. So it's not hookup wire, it's called... wire wrap, it's called. And this is actually a wire from yesteryear. We used to have, back in the 80s, a little gun. The wire wrap would go in your gun, and you'd be able, and it was, you know, it's one of these things that everything would be, your mail pins would be up, and you put the gun over the top of it, and you press the little trigger, and it would wrap the wire around and pull up across, and then strip, and you could just go boop, boop, boop. You could wire really quickly with this gun. It's one of these things which I definitely miss, which is different from the prototyping boards we have at the moment. Sort of, so it's this beautiful piece of engineering to girths, but this wire is designed to be quite stiff, and it is apparently high Q, so I can use this. But you can't use anything which frequency damps anywhere, and I've sort of found that out. And of course, what I am looking for is the lowest signal possible. So the lowest signal possible means that I get there's some sort of signal, there's some sort of or something else which is pumping it higher than its lowest signal possible. I don't quite know how to describe that. So I'm if I've got sort of parasitic effects. Did I want to go through here? No, I don't. Can I get through out here? I really didn't want to do this. I am forced to do this. Oh, no, it's not so bad. No, that's excellent. So I'll be out of here in no time whatsoever. So I'm going off to get a brass shim. So you need brass, because it's a magnetic field, and although what I've built, so the Einstein stuff and the 1960s stuff was incredibly magnetically field sensitive. Now what I've built, the rig I've built, the important thing is it's not magnetically field sensitive. It purely picks up the spin. This is a pretty astonishing thing to see it operate at here. So let me say, the legend is that this device is not, the conventional wisdom is that this is not a lecture demonstration, and because it's not a lecture demonstration, there's a series of things I have to, sorry, unfortunately my brain is not that switched on. I have to find a park, and I have indeed found a park. So the idea is that this something had, they've sort of, because Einstein's done it and it's done in the 60s, they've sort of haven't asked the question of, well, what does solid state do? And I myself didn't ask that question. I didn't say, oh, I'm so smart, I think solid state will do it. I just said, surely this is an important experiment to do. Why can't it be a lecture demonstration? An important point. I'm going to have to leave you here at the moment, and I'll continue podcasting when I get the stuff back. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm back again just after purchasing some brass 1mm strip. Look, and really, it's hard to say. This is really sort of the advantage of being in a laboratory, which of course I'm not. You get your hands on something, and you pick something up in your hands, and you play with it for a while. You get the weight and the feel of it. And the beautiful thing is, this is 1mm by thick, by 12mm by 300mm long strip. And this is sort of ideal, and it moves and flexes. And the beautiful thing is, it will fit in the base of my little optical rails which I've got for it. So now let's talk about the Arduino. Is it suddenly lets you switch and control things 100 times faster and with greater precision with less. It's a mechanical switch. No matter how good it is, has this period of time where there's no current flowing. Now with the solid state switching, it's sort of nanosecond. So there's, the electric field's on at the same time. Now this is really important because the electric field is a, just watching my way through here. Because, field on and off, you have your piece of metal, ferrite and stuff like that, and it's attracted from low field to high field. So what this does is the moment that time that it's switched off, which is, you know, with the mechanical switch, you're lucky if it's a millisecond, okay? 2 milliseconds. And so if you have a time where it's just shaking the bejesus out of it. Now, just see how I'm going to look around here. What are you doing, mate? Sorry, there's a dense roundabout with too many people in it. And I'm just stuck here waiting. I don't know what you're doing. Oh, it's pandemonia. It's too many people. Imagine Penrith. It's not such a big place. And you get traffic jams and build up. It's really poorly designed, except you can get to the hobby shop relatively easily. Yeah, so, it's all, so the Arduino is solid state. It's just sort of hiding behind a serial port, and I suppose I just don't want to write, but I will be forced to write LabVIEW to interrogate the serial port. It's just, there's no manuals for it, and it's just such a pain for it. The other aspect of it, so I can go high frequency, and obviously the way to do if you've got low precision timing, oscillation, is to build a lower Q thing. There's two aspects. You can build a low Q thing. That's the high Q is the high Q or high frequency sensitivity you have, the longer you have to wait around. Oops. This is going to be a dream run home. And that's what I want. Let's give me an idea. The electronics is sort of just miles and miles ahead. And there's nothing to do with me. I'm not saying I'm much better than Einstein or anything like that. It's just after 100 years where it was horse and buggy, and now the majority of people, if they want to get anywhere, they would catch, in the majority of the world, some people would have electric trains, trams, but a majority of people would have horse and buggy and that type of stuff around that time. The fact that they did anything is great then. The second aspect is the type of pendulum that you want. Now, because this is a torsion effect, you immediately go torsion the electrons a gyroscope, and you flip the electrons up and down, and so the gyroscope acts as a torsion, a one-off torsion on your beam. And you say, oh, well, the torsion pendulum. Now, the beauty or the a torsion pendulum, you can build any resonator you want, and you can build a very high Q. It's just whether it's coupled to other modes of rotation at the same, around the same frequency. So, say if you've got a pendulum on a string, there's the torsional mode, there's the sway from side to side mode in two dimensions, then there's the actual springiness that can pop up and down. And all these modes store energy, and they can be coupled by coupling mechanisms. So very soon, and it's not it can top and down, it can also wobble, it can oscillate around its center of mass if it's got a very thin string helping up. Normally if you've got a big solid bar, it can't do all of this, but if it's on a thin string, it can do all these crazy things. I can think of at least, probably 5 oscillation modes of a torsion pendulum. And the art of it is that you want to pick one and dump your energy into one and take your energy out of one, and that you don't cut the coupling of it. And this is recipe for nightmare. And of course I began doing this down by having it a torsion pendulum where the actual weight is suspended on a taut wire, so at least it can't jump up, and there's a few oscillations about it. And this has definitely picked up the problem of the mechanical switch. You see the mechanical switch just doing it around, a bit like a man on a noose, you know, how they fly around a noose. And a contribution from my friend Simon Fleming saying, why don't you try this process, this material? I began to look at what the material was, where the cue was. So initially, my first one was with rubber. You know, rubber, it would have to be, rubber is shock absorber. Now that's absolute death. And why not this material? And it was a polyurethane with an extremely hard stretch. And that possibility led to a series of things where I said, oh, well, why don't we actually make this a horizontal pendulum? It's a torsional, almost a torsional pendulum. It's sort of a cross between a torsional pendulum and a conventional pendulum. So if the axis is directly on the axis, is a torsional pendulum. And as we move off a little bit, it converts slowly, sort of linearly into a conventional pendulum. Now, the great thing about a conventional pendulum is that the oscillation speed goes up from a low to a maximum. So as your axis, so you've got a cylinder on its side, and you're going to make a pendulum of it. So if you've got a wire going directly through the center of your cylinder and the cylinder's horizontal, the initial frequency of oscillation will be its rotational frequency, that the just conventional torsional pendulum. As you move the wire off center up, it will slowly increase in oscillation speed as you've got a restoring force of gravity, and that will go to maximum oscillation speed when the wire is sitting on top of your cylinder. Now, I'm able to do this because I don't have cylinders. I've actually got ferrite beads. These cost nothing, about 10 cents each. They are really sort of, you're paying more for the person smiling at you in the plastic bag than the actual ferrite beads. That amazingly cheap, but they're beautifully well machined. Now just getting up here, yep. You hear me? Just, that was a courtesy thrashing of my engine. So that person travelling along didn't have to slow down to let me in. Okay, we're almost back up. So going up to high Q. So initially with this I thought, oh well, I know how to make high Q stuff. I began to work out just by playing around that if I had any source of loss in the holding of the wire to my torsion thing, if it was anything like a shock absorber, strain relief, or anything like that, it would lower Q down. So the advantage is that this high frequency, I began to able to start to see these things, and it began to feed back on the Q. And I tried scalpels. Okay, and now this is again scalpel. I've got on blood thinners, so holding a scalpel is just. I did cut myself once with a scalpel, and took a whole day to stop bleeding. So let's be careful with that. Now, and also I've got a risk of blood infection, all this type of crap. You know, so if I cut myself, I've got to go on antibiotics and stuff. So before the dentist, I have to go on antibiotics. It's just, I'm feeling fantastic now, but there's the downsides are not even worth it. So, scalpels, I can do it. Fish hooks did come along. Fish hooks, there's no such thing as a non-magnetic fish hook. And fish hooks are high carbon, unbendable fish hook. So a fish hook, doesn't bend, it snaps. It's got no purpose in life in ever bending. It's got to be the same fish hook as ever. And if the fish is strong enough, it can just break the fish hook. So I found. Now, again, fish hooks, there's got a down pointy barb. You say, oh, God. Oh. You know, and you've got kids around. You say, oh, can I? You can't. You could possibly file down the barb, but that would be, I think you can't, they're unbendable. Now, the great thing is that they do provide a nice sharp point, and I was able to build one of these pendulums with it, but they're sort of high Q, but they also sort of bounce your pendulum, which isn't the thing, it's not mechanically secured to it, bounces around it, so it can vibrate and jump around your fish hooks a bit. And depending on what's going on, you can get different things happening to it. So just watching here. So it's a thing. So the Arduino allows you to go to high frequency, allows you to access high Q, and allows you to modify your pendulum design away from magnetic sensitivity. And I would say now that I have achieved the goal. I'm almost there. I've achieved it. There's no point measuring. So what you can do is that you can measure the magnetic field in your loop with a very fine wire, and the increased magnetic field in your loop is due to more electrons being aligned. Your extra kick. So if you put a loop of wire in free space, it will measure, and you vary the field. The electric field there will measure the B for you. But if you have, if you put the bar through it, that's going to have an impulse, an increase. Now, there's no magic. You're not saving more energy of it, because this electric field then cancels the electric field outside it. So that's what I say, electric field, I mean magnetic field. So you get a small wire, and you can actually just measure the population of electrons, which are flipping. You don't have to do anything about the material. You don't have to know anything. You then have to also calculate. There's the cops. The cops going there. And I've got this thing going around here. So, I now have it there in terms of that I introduce a large magnet around the outside. Not much effect. You can get some effect. So, but the better it's built, the more intolerant it is. And then you put it on a lazy Susan, the entire thing in a pool chemical bucket, and then that on a lazy Susan. And I just rotate it around. And there is no sort of magic point where the Earth's magnetic field is aligned such it doesn't interact with it. It looks as though it has a very small amount to do with it. Now, what's happening here is that this is so high Q that if you shake it and so this is what I'm doing here is that at the moment I've built it from stainless steel screws and a little optical thing and solder. Yeah, so solder is by far better than glue. It's solder, it's got no yield strength, it's just, you just couldn't ask for anything better than that. Okay, what's this person doing? So I'm back home, and after this, so you're halfway through, and now the thing I have to work out is Raspberry Pi or LabVIEW. Raspberry Pi allows you to do things, but LabVIEW, so it's LIFA, LabVIEW interface for Arduino, and you can buy this as a kit, but what does it do? Does it, Yeah, it's the big question. Is it basically a manual that you can do? And so how can you get things? Thanks a lot for listening. After this, I'll get back and finish off my other podcast. Thank you. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.